Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the President William McKinley Show. Our salute.
Why on earth would you choose that?
Well, I will tell you. First of all, a little bit about McKinley. 25th president, served from 1897 until his assassination in 1901, led the nation to victory in the Spanish-American War, and that gave us Puerto Rico, Philippines, Guam, and Spain relinquished its claims to Cuba. He also annexed Hawaii. Now, you got to admit, a guy that goes out and annexes Hawaii is going to get my vote. Just saying.
Have you been there?
I have not been to Hawaii. That's
so
one of my things.
Why do you like it so much? Why do you think it's so great? Because who says it was a great steal for the U.S.?
Because I can dream. And Hawaii is the place that I dream of going.
What are you dreaming about in Hawaii?
I want to take a trip there.
Yeah, why?
Because it's pretty.
How do you know?
Hawaii 5-0.
I knew you were going to finally get there. I thought it was the grass skirts and, you know.
No, Hawaii 5-0.
Tony, I can't even imagine you in a grass skirt.
That's a sight for radio. His face is on the $500 bill. That's Sandy.
They didn't have $500 bills anymore, do they?
I don't think
so. They did away with 500 and 1,000.
But he was on it. And that's one of his problems. He's being forgotten. Mount McKinley, of course, in Alaska, named after him. That was originally McKinley Park, and now it's, of course, Denali Park. The thing about McKinley that's interesting is he actually raised tariffs to protect American industry, and he passed something called the McKinley Tariff, framed for the people as a defense to their industries, protection of the labor of their hands, a safeguard to the happy homes of American working men, and it's a security to their education, their wages, and their investments. It will bring to this country a prosperity unparalleled in our history and unrivaled in the history of the world. Pretty good for protectionism, isn't it?
I guess.
Shot by a guy named Czolgosz, who was a Polish worker who was an anarchist. Two shots in the abdomen, developed gangrene, and later died of infection, basically, from bullet wounds to his abdomen. And he was buried in his hometown of Canton, Ohio. And he was actually shot on September 5th in 1901,
so
and died on September 12th. Yeah, this weekend is the 1901 would be the 114th anniversary of the assassination of McKinley.
On.
And the thing about McKinley was, at the time, he was a beloved president. He was Lincoln, at the time.
Is it beloved or beloved?
I'm going with beloved because I like the way it sounds. especially on radio. But Lincoln was respected, but people didn't really love Lincoln at the time because they had been through so much.
Right. Well, he was McKinley, probably one of those love-hate presidents.
Yeah, but McKinley won the Spanish-American War, gave them Hawaii, protected the American working man. He was quite a guy. Like I said,
somebody killed him.
Yep. An anarchist, though. A guy who felt that he was part of the problem with all of his protectionist tariffs, I guess. Our sponsor, wait a second. You get me busy talking, and then things don't go well. My co-medical host here, before we do our sponsor, to talk about our web presence from the University of Kentucky, manager of communications infrastructure, and a scoffer at the legacy of William McKinley, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. I didn't say anything to denigrate or take anything away from
You're questioning
McKinley.
Hawaii, and our Hawaiian listeners should know I rose in defense of our 50th state, whereas Rick was, in fact, questioning whether or not it was even worth it.
You put it on a pedestal. I'm just saying it was a good acquisition. It wasn't, you know. See, I went to high school in Arizona, so I'm kind of fond of taking in Arizona. See that, right? That happened. Actually, it's funny. He did all this before Arizona because Arizona didn't come in until the, 1940 something?
That's a good point. I'll have to go look at my state time. He annexed Hawaii,
but I assumed
it was. Yeah, but it was annexed.
It was one of the last states.
I guess, a U.S. territory at that time, along with Guam and Puerto Rico.
But just interesting. I don't have anything against the guy. You know, you put all these words in my mouth, but here's some words for you. WMKY.org. Do you know what those words mean, Tony?
Sounds like letters to me.
Well, they're letters, but... They are letters, but they form something. I don't know. It's not a word. Forget it. It's where you go to listen to the show.
Do you want to move on to the sponsor, or are you going to try to sell
this? No, I'm going to take a long time before we go to the sponsor. I'm going to steal your thunder, because I'm sure you have this wonderful sponsor that I'm not going to give you enough time to talk about. WMKY.org. WMKY.org. That is Moorhead State Public Radio's website. Find Health Matters. Look at the show summaries. Listen to the shows. The links are there. You can listen to them anytime just by going to that website. Sign up for a podcast. Have Health Matters delivered to you automatically. We usually come out about 4 days after airing live on the air. Usually come out Saturday morning. You'll see the podcast come out sometime on Tuesday. By all means, sign up for that podcast. After that, interact with the show. Jump over to our fan page on Facebook. It's facebook.com/HM Radio Show. There you can interact with us. You can leave us messages, give us some show topics, give us feedback. You know, if you don't like something like, you know, the sponsor, certainly let Tony know. You know, sometimes he needs to know that because, well, just trust me, he needs to know. Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, the Disease of the Month Club.
Oh my gosh, what a wonderful... No, I'm just kidding.
This month's disease, osteoporosis. And this came from the August issue of the American Family Physician, the top 10 fun facts we have culled from that review article.
Why top 10?
Because... To make you mad.
Why not top 9?
Because it
makes you
mad.
Not top 27.
I expected this.
Are you a Dave Letterman
thing? Wash right over me.
You know, David Letterman's no longer on the air, Tom.
I know.
You outlived him.
Top 10 fun facts about the diagnosis and management of osteoporosis. Number one, osteoporosis fractures affect approximately 1 in 2 white women, 1 in 5 white men in their lifetime, and only 40% of those people actually regain their independence after these fractures. These are life-altering events for senior citizens. Fun fact number two, 10 to 20% increase mortality 1 year after you've had one of these fractures. They take away your joy of life. They put you on pain medicines, and those can cause complications. Fun fact number three, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends we screen for thinning of the bones using something called dual energy X-ray absorptiometry. We call those are the DEXA scans that you see in the doctor's office. Screen all women, 65 years and older and younger than that, if they have an increased fracture risk. If you want to know if you have an increased fracture risk, go to the World Health Organization's FRAX, F-R-A-X, Fracture Risk Assessment Tool. You can search that term and you will be able to find it. The risk fun fact number four, risk factors for osteoporosis include excessive alcohol intake, caffeine intake, more than 2.5 cups of coffee per day, tobacco use, family history of thin bones, immobilization, we're back to last week's sitting too much, and low-level physical activity. Increasing age, that goes without saying, low body weight. If you are thin, you are more likely to have brittle bones, low calcium or vitamin D intake, personal history of fracture, and being white as opposed to being African-American because of the change of bone structure. That is the first four of our top 10 fun facts about osteoporosis. Our sponsor, the disease of the month, Bub, this month's disease, osteoporosis. And remember, when your bones are brittle, you must not quibble. Eat a diet with calcium. Go to the gymnasium.
Now you're working just a little too hard.
Speaking of working too hard, which is a great segue, this was something that I just ran across, but it was published last spring in the Wilderness and Environmental Medicine Journal. Now, they have 4 issues a year. This was the spring 2015 issue. And, Rick, you know, we're headed for cold weather. As a matter of fact, back a couple of weeks ago, we had a real kind of a in August, our nighttime temperatures were down around 50. Our high temperatures were in the 70s. Unusual weather. And it was one of those Canadian blasts that comes through perfectly fine in the summer. But we remember those things last winter, how our temperatures would drop to 20 below. So the question is always, you've heard that you lose 90% of your heat through your head.
That's what they say.
Right. So, again, if 90% of heat escapes from your head, if you're caught out in the cold, the first thing you do is take your shirts and pants off and wrap them around your head. It's the only way to survive because that's where 90% of your heat loss occurs.
You're going to get me to agree with you? I tell you what. Here's what I propose we do. We'll take you and we'll go out in the cold. And we're going to test this theory.
It was already done. And this
No, but it won't be the same unless I get pictures of you and put them on Facebook.
First of all, this is garbage. The reason 90% of your heat escapes from your head is because you're wearing clothes. I mean, right. You know, your head has a lot of blood vessels. It does lose some heat, but as far as 90%, that's ridiculous. It's absurd. Well, this group wanted to know, if you are buried in an avalanche, would you lose heat faster if you didn't have head protection and face protection? So this is taking it to extremes. Sure, your mom told you, put something on your head or you will catch cold. Your mom, I'm sorry to say, was wrong. But in this case, they're asking, what if you're buried in the snow? Would having something on your head actually protect you? Now, to solve this problem, things got really scary. They went up 8,500 feet on the slopes of Wasatch Mountain. It's a ski resort in Washington State. They built an 8-foot-high mound of snow. So basically, your
small glacier.
Yeah, you standing up plus 2 feet of snow on top.
Small glacier.
They dug a trench through the middle and they buried people in the trench with about 2 feet of snow over the top of your head. Now, they use this, there's an avalanche breathing system. They were completely buried in the snow and breathing through this avalanche breathing system. Now, Rick, it even gets worse. So you can imagine, here is research. Now, they got permission from these people, but this is terrifying. You get buried in the snow.
Well, you know what's going to happen and you sign off. They must be paying them.
Well, and I don't know how much they were paying them. They were hoping to get 11. They got 9 volunteers, 9 brave souls, including one of the researchers actually did it herself. They were undergrads and medical students, so you know that they're not actually human beings. They were packed in the snow for an hour, and again, 2 feet of snow above their head. Now, here's the other thing. They had one probe, a rectal probe, to determine their core temperature in their rectum. They swallowed another, basically, thermometer, so they'd get their core in the middle part of their gut, and then they have one that they drop down into their esophagus. They've got these 3 probes in their system. They're completely buried in the snow. They're breathing through an avalanche breathing system, and they're completely buried. 9 volunteers buried twice, once with something covering their face and once without, and they measured how quickly they cooled off being buried using their core temperature. It turns out, just for the record, even if you didn't wear, if you only wore goggles to protect your eyes, you lost heat no more rapidly than if you wore a balaclava. That's one of those head things. I don't know. It's a thing. I know that. But at any rate, if you insulated your head, you really didn't slow down your rate of heat loss.
Well, you're in an iceberg.
Yeah, but I mean, you're in an iceberg with your head insulated or not insulated. The rest of your body, I assume, is insulated in the sort of stuff you'd wear when you ran into an avalanche. And they talked to one of these guys, a guy named Dean Tanner, and he said, he volunteered. He said, I'm a backcountry skier. I thought this would benefit me by providing new information to the avalanche community, as well as instilling an enhanced fear of avalanches in me, which it did. So he now has whatever an enhanced fear of avalanches is.
Right.
I have a pretty big fear of avalanches myself.
I don't.
Okay.
I don't go near them.
He said, I definitely make more conservative decisions now in the backcountry, partly because how horrendous it was to be buried in the snow. He was afraid with that esophageal thermometer, he would throw up and he would not be able to breathe until they could get him out. And it was terrifying. This was, I got to tell you, this is really, really uncomfortable research. We're going to let you get comfortable. Decide whether you want something on your head or not on your head. Get a cooling drink and cool down your core temperature. We're going to come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the President William McKinley Show. Our salute to our nation's 25th president, a very popular president who was assassinated on September 5th in 1901. Our sponsor for the second time, Disease of the Month Club. Our Disease of the Month is osteoporosis. We're giving you the top 10 fun facts about osteoporosis. Number one, it affects 1 in 2 white women, 1 in 5 white men. Only 40% regain the level of independence they had before they developed a fracture. Fun fact number 2, 10 to 20% increased mortality 1 year after you have a fracture. Fun fact number 3, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, our national organization that recommends screening procedures, says we should screen all women 65 years and older, and younger women if they have the FRAX, F-R-A-X, search that, you can find it, a high FRAX score, and you do that online risk assessment. Fun fact number 4, risk factors, excess alcohol intake, excess caffeine, tobacco use, family history, immobilization or low physical activity, increasing age, obviously, low body weight, low calcium or vitamin D intake, personal history of fracture, and a white or Asian race. Fun fact number 5, the first line treatment consists of fall prevention, smoking cessation, and moderating your alcohol intake. So, Let's say if you're smoking, it's going to raise your risk of osteoporosis. You need to stop. If you are drinking more than one drink for women, two drinks for men a day, then you need to moderate that alcohol intake for a lot of reasons. But one of them is it makes your bones more brittle. Now, fall prevention would include an exercise program that has weight bearing, resistance, and balance training. If you do your exercise by hopping on a bicycle or a treadmill and you simply do cardio and nothing else, you don't practice the balance movement. You don't gain the strength you need to avoid falls. So again, you don't want to do only aerobic exercise. You want to incorporate balance and weight resistance in your exercise to avoid falls. The other thing, obviously, is in terms of fall prevention, is go around the house, look for things that you might trip on. My family had, my parents to this day still have a set of pressure-treated pine wood steps, which when they are wet, they are slick as glass. That is in front of their house. Despite my vigorous remonstrations, I cannot get them to take those steps out. I have got them to use some side steps, but they are still at risk. You may be at risk with low lighting, with throw rugs, or with the that type of decking around your house. Please consider that as you get older. That we'll leave it at that. That was fun fact number five. We'll get to fun fact number six in our next fractional portion. That's our sponsor, Disease of the Month Club, our Disease of the Month osteoporosis. When your bones become brittle, you must not quibble. Eat a diet with calcium. Go to the gymnasium. Not much of a motto.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a long day for you. And you just, I'm sure we're trying to get out of, you know, some obligations, so to speak.
All right, I'm going to put one fun thing in this fractional portion. And then, Rick, I'm going to go to perhaps yet another nightmare scenario. Last time we talked about being buried above your head in the snow with rectal probes in place for an hour with or without a hat on. And now we're going
to
go.
Do the rectal probes, does adding the cold really make that worse?
I think.
Isn't it pretty bad already?
Just in general, it was a mess. And it turned out the esophageal one was the one that really got everybody because it makes you want to throw up. And you've got this one tube that sticks out of the snow that you're breathing through. And if you throw up in that tube, life is going to get very complicated. But let's not go back to the first fractional portion. First
of
all,
we just did.
A good piece of technology, Rick, and you'll like this. This was August 25th. The FDA approved the first continuous glucose monitoring system that sends data directly to your smartphone. Does not require a separate receiver. It's called the Dexcom G5 Mobile CGM system, approved August 25th for children as young as age 2 all the way up to adults. Now, this thing gets implanted under your skin, uses wireless Bluetooth technology built into the transmitter, sends real-time glucose information directly to an app on your iPhone or your other iOS-enabled device. And they expect Android applications probably by next year. You can have up to 5 followers. That's a little uncomfortable. That means that your parents can get a continuous reading of your glucose. That means also a caregiver or a medical clinic, for that matter, could do that as well. So I don't know how I feel. Would you want your wife monitoring your glucose?
Yes.
Well, I sometimes have been known to sneak a cookie.
Yeah.
Let me say, my cookie sneaking days end if my wife is able to monitor my glucose on her smartphone. That would be a serious problem for me.
Yeah, that might end up being an issue. But you know what, Tony? She's the one person in the world who I know has my best interest. So I could tolerate that.
Yeah, but her methods are so rough.
Would I let you see it? No. Not a chance.
Well, and for what I know,
as my doctor, I would not want you to see it.
As a teenage diabetic, the other thing is giving your parents that level of control is sort of like, you know, those follow your phone or your car apps. It's a bit much.
It needs to be done with stealth.
Yeah. It provides glucose trend information and also issues alert. But here's the thing. According to the FDA approval, you still have to do fingerstick glucose testing for determining insulin doses. And that, I think that makes me very discouraged by this. I mean, this sounds great. First of all, then you've talked about your band that you've got. Now, you put some real devices on that thing. Let's say that hooks into your pacemaker and you're able to get a monitoring of how frequently your heart's being paced, or it hooks into a glucose monitor or other sensors. At that point, we're talking about some real computing power there on your phone using Bluetooth.
Sure.
I think it is great.
Absolutely.
So this is the direction we will be heading. I think we're going to have to validate this thing so that you don't have to poke needles in yourself to adjust your medicines. It needs to be reliable enough that we can do that. But still, it's an exciting advance. I'll give you that. They plan on selling this actually late September 2015. So with FDA approval, you can now monitor your glucose continuously on your smartphone with an FDA-approved device, and they plan on selling them. It is Dexcom is the name of the company, and they are shipping in, it's called a G5 mobile CGM system, CGM for continuous glucose monitoring system, and we think it's the wave of the future. I don't know how about this product. Like I said, I am disappointed that it is not accurate enough to help our diabetics actually adjust their medicines without finger sticks, but it is certainly a step forward, and someday we will eliminate finger sticks altogether, and this is a step in the right direction. Back now to our nightmare scenario, which this seems to be. I mean, we've got a president assassinated. We've got people buried in the snow and worried about vomiting in their breathing tube. Now we are going to talk about church potlucks. This was
Really going to go there?
Yes. This was the CDC Morbidity Mortality Weekly Report, which is something a lot of us read pretty religiously because it tells us about disease outbreaks. This was April. Actually, it was reported out in, I think it's I believe it was actually last week, but I'm not sure. The event, though, occurred April 21st. I'll take you to Fairfield, Ohio. The Fairfield Medical Center and the Fairfield Department of Health contacted the Ohio Department of Health about a patient suspected of having botulism in Fairfield County, Ohio. Now, remember, botulism is Botox is botulin toxin, and that's the problem. Botulism leads to paralysis. If you inject it into your face, you look younger. And Rick, I'm not making any suggestions, but you might want to consider that. Age and time are catching up with you. A little botulinum toxin.
Do you really want to go down that age path with me? Is that something you really, have you thought this through all the way?
Well, aside from being a receding hairline, I think I have youthful good looks, whereas you, my friend.
But you use the word think.
Well, let's do a viewer poll. I mean, certainly we have lots of people out there listening to us. They can decide whether I have youthful good looks or not.
Tony, you do realize that I'm twice the man you are, right?
But the point is, you can use that botulinum toxin to relax the muscles of the face. You can also use it to treat headaches or muscle spasms, and it is FDA approved for those things in limited amounts, injected, again, by a healthcare provider. In this case, it was not limited amounts. This was, in fact, taken by mouth, and there was botulinum toxin throughout the body. And if you paralyze the muscles, the first thing that happens is a person stops breathing. So this is a very serious condition. Within 2 hours of that initial notification on April 21st, there were four more patients who showed up in the emergency room with similar symptoms. Fortunately, somebody in that emergency room was thinking and realized that there was a problem. Later that afternoon, one patient died, Rick. One patient died of respiratory failure shortly after arriving at the emergency room department. Now, here's the thing. Every one of those people went to the same church potluck 2 days before.
Ooh.
Yes, that's right. Now, there were the CDC and the health department began tracing. They found 77 people who went to that potluck. 25 out of 77 actually met the definition, the case definition of botulism. Four had some symptoms, but they met the probable case definition. These were people ages 9 to 87 years old.
What was that, 9 to 87?
That is a wide age range. 25 of those patients, again, we had 25 definites, 4 probables. Out of those 29 people, 25 of them received an antitoxin to botulism, and 11 of those 29 people had to be on breathing machines. 11 people on breathing machines, and one person died in the emergency room as a result of a church potluck. Within 1 week of the first patient's arrival, 16 patients had already been discharged, so they were kept less than a week. But here you've got, then, 11 people on breathing machines, you've got 25 people who have botulism, you've got one person dead in the emergency room as a result of a church potluck. Now, they went back and did interviews with these people who went to the potluck. They found that consumption of potato salad was the thing.
Oh, no.
14 times the risk rate.
Never liked potato salad.
Here is another reason not to like potato salad. They had 12 food specimens they got from the church dumpster. They actually went dumpster diving, find these. Of the 12, 6 were positive for botulinum toxin. 5 contained potato salad. 1 had macaroni and cheese. It might have been contaminated after being discarded, so they're not sure that the mac and cheese had anything to do with it. But potato salad, clearly, yet. Now, let me just read this next paragraph.
I'm listening.
Whole paragraph. The attendee who prepared the potato salad with home canned potatoes said they used a boiling water canner, which does not kill the Botox spores, rather than a pressure canner, which does. In addition, they did not heat up the potato salad after they took it out of the can, and that could have inactivated the toxin. This is the largest botulism outbreak in the United States in 40 years.
Wow.
Now, my question is, Imagine this. You're going to go to the church potluck. You pull out your homemade potato salad, which you are proud of, and you bring it to the church salad. And 2 days later, we've got one person dead, 11 people on ventilators, and it's your potato salad. Is this not the worst week ever?
You know, Tony, I don't even know. I mean, there's a couple of things here. I feel bad for that person because they're going to be pretty messed up for a long time. And second, I don't know if I want to do a church potluck anymore.
It's tough.
Do you do the church potlucks?
Yeah.
Now I know why we pray before we eat.
I know what you're saying. I will tell you, though, you know, I mean, I get very nervous if that food's been out. You know, our rule is 2 hours and scrap. I mean, so if I go to these family things and they say, oh, you know, we'll eat lunch and then we'll come back and eat dinner from the same table. And I get very nervous about that. I am.
Do you conveniently get called out? The pager goes off?
I usually don't eat if it's been out more than 2 hours. I just feel uncomfortable. And again, you know, this doesn't happen. Obviously, it doesn't happen very often. But when it happens, it is awful. It is life-threatening.
Well, I mean,
some of
you know,
these
and
things.
It's in this particular case, it's good that they found the culprit, the what we would say is the root cause. But it's also traumatic. I mean, it makes it hard on the person who this person should feel really bad. Should they feel?
Yeah.
I mean, the circumstances sounded like it could happen to lots of people,
right?
Because of the way that it was heated and not heated, and cooked and not cooked, and frankly, I hate cold salads, so I'm really not in any danger here.
Yeah,
I have never liked anything that's cold salad.
You know, of all the things you talked about, avalanches in the first fractional portion, I am more likely to be buried in an avalanche than I am to die from eating cold potato salad. I can say that unequivocally. I may not be able to avoid avalanches, but I can avoid potato salad like nobody's business.
Me too. Me too. Matter of fact, I've even perfected putting it on my plate and making it look like I ate it.
Final word from the CDC, close adherence to established home canning guidelines can prevent botulism and enable safe sharing of home canned produce. Please pay attention. Do not drink while canning. Because things can go bad really quickly.
I don't know. That was a tough one. I mean, you know, I'd say from the headline, you think, wow, there's a whole lot of fun there to joke. I mean, you know, we tend to bring things on that are jokeable. They have a high crazy
factor. But this hits home, doesn't it? Because you're thinking about the person that made that, and I am too.
Yeah, I feel bad for them. I really do. But then also, I'm thinking, I go to an awful lot of church potlucks.
Yeah.
I mean, you think the church would be offended if I, right before I got to my place in line, right when I got to it, if I took out a thermometer and stuck
yes.
it in the food and then just walked down the line checking everything's temperature?
They absolutely would. I will tell you, you know, I am dead serious. If it's been out more than 2 hours, don't ask me. I'm not touching it.
And you all actually track that? You can...
Well, I mean, you know... what I see is, and this is what scares me, my mom, she'll put that stuff out and it'll just lay on the table.
What if you get invited to a party and you get to the party and the food's already out? How do you start the clock on that?
I usually eat before I go. I'm kind of particular about food, and if I don't know what's happened, if I can't see the chain of custody, I don't like it.
You're a food weirdo, aren't you?
You could call me that. You read this stuff and it changes your life.
Well, I was kind of hoping I never had to read that because, you know, I'm one of those, you know, let's just grab a plate full of food and go for the gusto. But my gut has never let me down. You know?
All right. Well, let's just keep rolling because I've got more. This is good stuff here. This is from something called Medical News, August 20th. All right. We know we don't have great international disease surveillance system, right? There could be infections come into this country and we would not know about it. And we learned that with Ebola and SARS and some of the other viruses. How do these diseases get from one country to another, Rick?
Airplanes.
Right. International aircraft are known as important transmission routes for infectious diseases. This was a person, Frank Møller Erostrup, and I know I've mispronounced that. He's at the National Food Institute in Copenhagen. He says almost 1.5 billion people will travel internationally by plane in 2016. 1.5 billion people. So the folks there at the National Food Institute and a group called DTU Systems Biology looked to see if they might be able to monitor and respond to outbreaks of diseases globally faster. Now, first of all, Rick knows with technology, we can look and see who's Googling symptoms, and that might give us some clue. Here's another way. This was published in Scientific Reports in July. They looked at the toilet contents from 18 international planes, and they did DNA analysis on the waste. So if you hopped on a plane and that plane landed in Copenhagen and was one of those 18, they would pull the toilets off the plane.
What's that job description? What do they call that person?
Well, that person, I think, would probably
International specimen collector?
They would probably be okay with church potlucks. You know, I mean, it becomes a relative thing. But the interesting thing...
How did they get the blue dye out of it?
What they found, good question, what they found was they looked at antimicrobial resistance patterns. That is, there's going to be germs in that, obviously. But what were these germs, in fact, already resistant to antibiotic? Were there different types of germs coming on flights from different continents and different countries? And they found higher rates of antibiotic resistance coming from Asia. And again, antibiotics are easier to get there, so you can understand how human beings from those areas would have higher rates of resistance. But their point is, if we analyze these airplane wastes, we may be able to catch these diseases and find them before people come in sick. We can actually find asymptomatic people through their waste products.
Tony, I get it. That seems to make sense. And, you know, obviously we'll take a few minutes here and let people make their own mind up. But it would have seemed to me that if we're looking for things that grow, bacteria or something like that, that unless the thing is completely sterilized in each transition through the globe, you know, through the air, I think, you know, you could keep remnants of things on there throughout multiple flights. And so, you know, if as long as that plane's going back and forth from the U.S. to Asia, U.S. to Asia, U.S. to Asia with no stops in Copenhagen, then things are going to be okay, but
I understand.
I don't know.
Here's the one thing, before we go to break, the one thing. This is the beauty of DNA analysis as opposed to culture. Culture, you grow everything, and whatever grows fastest is the biggest. DNA analysis is going to eliminate those trace things, and it's going to find the things that are most common in the waste itself. So it's a great, great way to get around that problem.
And we'll talk about that job description later.
Right. Why don't you get around your own problems? Because we're going to take a break and come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the President William McKinley Show. Our salute to the 25th President of the United States.
Is this not exhausting?
Well, that was a tough fractional portion,
You hit everything that's kind of, well, outside of family, that's dear to me. You hit the potlucks at church and you hit the air travel.
That's right. Rick was highly offended by the airplane poop story.
Well, it was the collector. I'm trying to figure out what the official title of that dude is.
That's another one of those jobs that should pay very well. Being buried in the snow, collecting airplane poop, there ought to be a really nice compensation for that sort of thing, right?
Where do you come up with this stuff?
It just falls onto my desktop coming from the world
of
RSS feeds.
I'd love to see what your search engine looks like. I bet you've got some crazy results.
I have some terms on there that are not necessarily related to sex I don't really want to get out. I have to delete my browser history.
Who taught you how to do that?
So, there you go. Our sponsor for the final time, the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease, osteoporosis. When your bones are brittle, you must not quibble. Eat a diet with calcium. Go to the gymnasium. That's right. Physical activity plus eating a diet high in calcium is a good idea. We're at fun fact number six, actually. And I may have only nine. Rick, I may have misnumbered. How about that? Okay. That's pretty bad, isn't it?
It is.
All right. So here we go. Fun fact number seven. We'll jump to that. The first line medical treatment is something called bisphosphonates. We all know those as Fosamax, Boniva. These are the ones that advertise on TV, Actonel. One of the reasons they advertise on TV is these things generally run you anywhere from $50 to $100 per month, and they're to be taken for a long time. Usually we take these things. We initially thought we should maybe take them lifetime, but fun fact number eight is considered discontinuing it after 5 years if you did not actually have vertebral fractures, because there is a risk of some really odd breaks of the leg bones or problems with the jaw. And so the experts on the American Family Physician, the review recommends stopping it after 5 years. And fun fact number nine, if you cannot tolerate those medicines, and again, that's Actonel, Fosamax, Boniva, the bisphosphonates medicines, if you can't tolerate those, there's something called Forteo, and there's also a biologic product called denosumab or Prolia, and these are generally IV, and they are much more expensive, but they are less frequently taken, and they do offer protection as well. And then fun fact number 10, do not routinely repeat the DEXA scans more often than once every 2 years. If you are testing for osteoporosis every year, you are wasting your money and you are spending too much time testing. That is our sponsor, the Disease of the Month Club, this month's disease, osteoporosis.
So Tony, before we get started, this isn't related to anything we've been talking about. You and I have talked about this off the record, but I'm going to go on the record. This show, September 5th, right? 10 a.m. in the morning. Sorry for you people on Sunday that are hearing this again. You're too late on this. Today, opening our new Commonwealth Stadium at the University of Kentucky.
And you would ask yourself,
$128 million expansion.
Why would an IT person care? First of all, Rick likes football. I'll give you that. But Rick, what would make you care about that stadium and UK football on September 5th?
As part of this renovation and all the new press boxes and luxury suites and all the various low seating areas and IP televisions, this thing is high tech. Now, does it have wireless in the bowl? If you're going to the game today and you're expecting to get Wi-Fi sitting in the bowl, I'm sorry to say you're not going to get that this season. We're going to look at it next year. But what you will get is you're going to get whole new IPTVs. You're getting ribbons around the inside of the bowl. I mean, there's just a ton of upgrades as far as what this looks like. And the overall appearance of it is absolutely impressive. Now, in that building, Tony, we've got 500, again, IP-based TVs. So what does that mean? That means there's no cable. It's all done through network cables. So all the channels are delivered via the network, which is our area. So we're pretty proud of it. We've done it in a whole new network design out there, and we're going to be staffing it pretty heavily today.
All you do is really just plug them in, right, and turn them on, and then it's ready to go.
Yeah, great. You keep thinking that. We did not actually do that work. Some other vendor did. But nonetheless, it's been a red letter day for us. So we're excited. We hope everything goes well today.
So what you're saying, the wireless speed is going to be the same as the wireless speed always was, which is a problem in a crowd.
No. On your phone, your data connectivity on your phone, AT&T has stepped up to the plate and they've increased all the capacity. So your phone should be able to get text messaging. You should be able to do Facebook, Twitter, those types of things on your phone. You will not be able to connect to a Wi-Fi. If you have data on your phone, you're going to be okay. But if you're trying to get a Wi-Fi connection, you're not going to get it. And that's okay as long as the phone's working. Most people are okay with that.
Right.
So again, then you're going to get IPTV. You're going to get all the whole concourses itself are redone. It's really impressive. And the field is beautiful.
Well, you should go. First of all, we might have a good football team this year. Certainly some of the other teams in the SEC are going to have good football teams. And it's a really nice place to see a football game.
But for us, from a technology standpoint, the University of Kentucky Analytics and Technologies Communications and Network Systems Division did an awful lot of work in there.
All right, it's time to turn back on the squeamish meter.
Yeah, I wanted to kill some time so we wouldn't talk about bad potato salad.
I've got
you
something worse.
You broke my heart in that last segment.
I've got something worse. This was August 20th, 2015. This was a review of what they call female Viagra or pink Viagra. You know, may have heard of this. It's been FDA approved.
That trended all over Yahoo for about a week. And it was all we could do. It just kept coming up every time.
Now, the drug name is called flibanserin. And you'll like this, the brand name is called Eddie-I.
Okay.
Eddie-I sounds, do you remember that old cheer where we'd, Eddie-I, oh, we'd like to say hello.
No, I don't remember that. That must
this
have been
back. This team's got to go.
Was that back when they created cheerleading?
Okay. But anyway, the name's Eddie-I. It's flibanserin. And this was a bad antidepressant medicine. By what I mean by bad was they did some clinical trials on this back probably 5-6 years ago, and it didn't work very well. It really was not much to treat depression. What they did find, what the company found and their data was, that women who were taking this had an increase in their sexual desire. Not a lot, but a little. The company decided it was not going to be able to market this antidepressant, and so they sold the rights to this to a different company, and the different company decided they were going to go after an approval for something called hypoactive sexual disorder, hypoactive sexual desire disorder, HSDD, hypoactive sexual desire disorder. It is something the psychiatrists have talked about. It's been controversial from the start, but the company had to get FDA approval for a condition that has no treatment, or at least at the time had no treatment, and they had to convince the FDA that this drug was worth the side effects to treat this condition. So it's been a fascinating past 5 years for this drug. First of all, we have to create the idea there is some sexual inequality. Men have testosterone. Men have Viagra. Men have other erectile dysfunction drugs. Now, these drugs don't make you want to have sex more. They enable you to have sex physically.
Right. The desire is already there.
Right. So this is not, in fact, the analogy is bad. The analogy here that this is some kind of female Viagra is wrong, because Viagra is not affecting desire. This is a antidepressant medicine that didn't work for depression, but does create a little bit of increase in desire. You're going to see commercials after commercials, because, again, now that the FDA has given permission, this company has to convince you that you need this drug. So this thing will be all over TV. It will be all over.
Do you think it will?
Yeah, they have to. They're not going to sell any product unless they convince you that you need this product.
I don't know. Okay, we'll see. But I don't think we're going to see it as rampant and as bad as you see Cialis, Viagra, Levitra, whatever it is.
But here's the thing. Men are desperate for Viagra and Cialis. Men, people come in.
Do you think women are desperate for this pill?
No.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think
so. We've got to advertise it even more to make them desperate for it.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
I mean, only thing you're going to do is you're going to get the men talking about it and probably be pushy about it. I hope that doesn't happen, but
anyway, the method is apparently it modifies neurotransmitters. And again, we know that those Prozac-type medicines, this would be Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, and those type of medicines, they're called serotonin reuptake inhibitors. They increase serotonin. Well, they actually reduce your sexual drive. So this does the opposite and apparently increases your sexual drive a little bit. It is FDA approved to treat hypoactive sexual desire disorder in premenopausal women. This is not for postmenopausal women. Secondly, in the research trials, it increased the number of satisfying sexual events. Now, we in sexology, we call those SSEs, satisfying sexual events, by 0.5 to 1 per month. When you're on the medicine, on the average, you have one more satisfying sexual event per month.
Do you like saying that? Or are you very uncomfortable saying that? I'm looking at the expression on your face, and you look extremely uncomfortable saying that term.
But here's the thing. I think we've got to get this information out, because there is going to be a massive advertising campaign for this. I am absolutely convinced. I understand your reservations. 25% of women in those clinical trials did get an increase of four or more of these SSEs with flibanserin, compared to 15% assigned to placebo. So again, 10% of more women got four or more satisfying sexual events, but the average was only one more per month. The side effects, well, first of all, the effectiveness, again, like antidepressants, it takes a while to reset these transmitters. You don't really see full benefits, any benefits, for the first 4 weeks, and full benefits at 8 weeks. So this is not a Viagra thing where you can take it and immediately go out and have sex, or wait 2 hours and have sex. This is something, if you're going to commit to it, you got to commit for at least 8 weeks before you're going to see effects.
But Tony, that plays right into my argument. I mean, that's my argument is Viagra is effective. I mean, it takes somebody who can't get an erection and gives them one.
Yeah. It's changed. It's absolutely changed the way we approach erectile dysfunction.
But there's no, okay, it does one for this person or four for that. I mean, it traditionally, with a high percentage, works. This, on the other hand, one SS, what'd you say, E?
SSE. A satisfying
SSE,
sexual event.
I don't have to say that. I can say SSE.
Well, let's make sure we understand. It's a satisfying sexual event, Rick.
Okay, so one more a month is going to be hard to quantify.
Absolutely. Now, it gets worse. These side effects of this medicine, like the antidepressant medicines, drowsiness, obviously, and some mental fuzziness. The other thing is it can drop your blood pressure, and it can make you faint. It can make you pass out. So you take it at bedtime so that you immediately go to bed, and that way you're not upright where you might get dizzy. dizzy or pass out.
Even worse.
Yeah. And then the other thing is you cannot use alcohol with this. Alcohol blocks the breakdown and leads to dangerously high levels, so you cannot use alcohol with it. If there is any liver disease, you can have an elevation. The other thing is antibiotics and other medicines that require liver enzymes will cause this stuff to back up and will increase the risk of side effects. So you have to watch both the over-the-counter, things like St. John's wort, as well as prescription medicines, particularly prescription antibiotics. Because it is so complicated, only prescribers and pharmacists who take an online course will be able to prescribe it. So you've got to find your flibanserin EDI doctor who has gone through the certification to prescribe it to your flibanserin EDI certified pharmacist to pick it up, take it for 4 weeks to 8 weeks, endure the side effects, and to get an average of one more SSE per month.
And you really think that's going to be something they can put on TV and sell?
I think they're going to try. And I just want to tell Health Matters people. Now, I will tell you,
This is the pink pill. They're calling it the pink Viagra.
The pink Viagra. I'm telling our guys, I've been taking a hit here lately. One is we've been worried about testosterone and cardiovascular events. The research is mixed on that. The FDA finally said to all the manufacturers of testosterone, look, get together and give us a decent study. We're tired of these conflicting studies. But I came out against testosterone. I may be wrong on that. I came out against Zetia, and you may remember Thomas Wayne is in favor of that, and he semi-convinced me that maybe I've been too rough on Zetia. So I've had a bad summer in terms of making decisions. This one looks to me like an absolute slam dunk. This is a bad medicine. This is a medicine that, oh, the other one, this is discouraging. There was something that we talked about in the SGLT2 inhibitors. Right. These are medicines that make you pee your glucose down. Invokana is the leading one, but there's also one called Jardiance. Well, Jardiance, in one clinical trial yet to be published, but we've heard about it, may lower your risk of heart disease. And I hate these medicines. They ignore diabetes, and they put more sugar in your pee, and that's all they do. And I think that's stupid, but apparently our other medicines apparently are so bad that it may actually lower your risk of heart disease, which is discouraging. So I've had a bad summer. If you've been listening to me, I have made some pronouncements here. Yeah, Rick has done fine. Everything Rick has said so far has been correct. I have expressed some opinions that may or may not be right. We'll see how history proves me on this one. But I really believe that this stuff right here is junk, and I think that it should not be taken. That's my opinion. We'll see how it turns out. All right, this last section of the show, I'm calling Fun with Balloons.
Okay.
Because balloons, after all, are fun.
You say so.
All right. First, this Canadian...
I think somehow or another you can take the fun out of them.
Well, first of all, have you ever blown up a balloon with your nose?
No.
I don't know how
I never even thought to try.
I don't know how you made it through middle school. Honestly, don't. This was the Canadian Association of Medical Journal. A nasal balloon autoinflation as a low-cost, non-surgical treatment for kids with middle ear infusion. You know, you get fluid behind your eardrum because the tubes, the eustachian tube and the tubes that are supposed to drain out your ear get blocked up. Now, if that happens, you start to lose your hearing. And kids do this all the time. And they'll poke a hole in the eardrum and put in tubes.
Right.
This is the way they do it. The ear, nose, and throat doctors do this. Well, what they did, what these these researchers did, they took 300 British children ages 4 to 11 with ear symptoms who had fluid behind their eardrums, one or both ears, and they blew up a balloon with their nose 3 times a day for up to 3 months.
Oh, my goodness.
When they blow through the nostril to inflate this balloon, it increases pressure and it blows open the eustachian tubes, which leads to drainage of fluid. So it's sort of like, you know, if you sneeze or the other thing some people will do when they're in altitude or coming in a plane, you hold your nose and blow. It opens up those tubes and creates a communication with inside the ear so you don't feel that tension on your ears. They're doing it with a balloon. Now, you can't just buy a balloon at the store and do this. This balloon is made a certain thickness, a certain resistance, so you have to blow so hard to inflate.
Well, and let's face it, some new balloons, they're too tight. They wouldn't expand enough.
Yeah.
So you have to have one that's probably just right.
But you can imagine the kids would love blowing up a balloon with their nose.
No.
This is a great party trick in the eighth grade.
Yeah, but it had to be pretty small. Most people couldn't get a big, you couldn't do a balloon animal.
Yeah, but can you imagine? I mean,
you
got a
choice. And what animal would you do?
You're trying to avoid getting tubes put in your ears, and somebody says, why don't you blow up a balloon? And you say, hey, I will certainly try that. We should try going off the air, though.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Spencer Johnson and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show, and remember,
Health Matters is the first first and only FDA-approved radio show for hypoactive sexual desire disorder, affecting up to 1 in 10 women in the United States.
The safety of Health Matters is based on clinical trial data and more than 8,000 women exposed to our show for at least 1 year. Discontinuation rates due to adverse events were 13% for Health Matters and only 6% for the Front Page. The most common adverse events were dizziness, sleepiness, nausea, fatigue, insomnia, and dry ears.
Low blood pressure and fainting were seen with Health Matters alone, but more frequently when the show aired in the morning and when combined with alcohol or certain other drugs. Alcohol consumption is contraindicated for women listening to Health Matters.
Health Matters is passionate about women's sexual health. Based in Moorhead, Kentucky, the show is focused solely on the delivery of treatments options for women with hypoactive sexual desire disorder.
Health Matters is not indicated for treatment of HSDD in postmenopausal women or in men.
Health Matters is not indicated to enhance sexual performance.
Health Matters is available only...
I'm sorry, but who thinks that?
Health Matters is available only through a restricted program called the HMREMS program. The HMREMS requires that listeners are certified by enrolling and completing training, and radios are certified and will not play Health Matters unless it is prescribed by a certified prescriber.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week as we discuss the amazing changes when a gloomy gust gets a fun gust on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.